And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this?
A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy!
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds!
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Terms and restrictions apply.
The Athletic.
Hello, I'm Dan Bardell. Welcome to the England Show podcast on The Athletic. Coming up, we're going to look back on England's disappointing 0-0 draw with Scotland at Euro 2020.
Football ain't coming home with that team, I can tell you. Not the way they're playing.
Joined today by David Priest and The Athletic's Jack Pitbrook. It won't have been what Gareth Southgate or anyone had in mind last night, Jack. There's going to be a lot of negativity around it. You were there. Was it that bad?
It was that bad in terms of an England performance, yeah. So as an occasion, I thought it was great. I thought Scotland were fantastic. I think I, like a lot of people, massively underrated them, wrote them off. I thought they were really, really clever. I thought McGinn was great. I thought the McTominay was brilliant in defence. Hanley won everything. Gilmore is a genius. I think he's an amazing player to watch. And Dykes and Adams were a real handful up front. So, fair, you know, we have to acknowledge just how good Scotland were. And frankly, they made better chances in open play than England did. Adams especially. That said, England were really poor. Really, really poor. They didn't look like getting in behind. They only had one real chance, I think, which was the John Stones header against the post after 10 minutes. They looked short of ideas. Not much energy, didn't change things in the second half, the subs didn't work, and just a pretty disappointing, dispiriting evening at the office for England, and one that raises a lot of questions about England's abilities going through the tournament.
Yeah, David, Tyrone Mings talked after the game about England lacking intensity. It's really strange, that. Why do you think that is?
Sometimes it's just difficult to put your finger on it, but I think that I think all the talk before the game was about, especially from an England perspective, was sort of focusing on the processes of what, how they were going to approach the game, and not really sort of focus on that being drawn into a bit of a fight and a battle. And sometimes you do need that. Sometimes, you know, when the focus is solely on just what you're going to do on the pitch, you forget about what the other team's going to do. You know, Scotland played a big part in that last night. That, I mean, I thought they were going to be overawed, to be honest with you. When it looked as if they were coming out on the pitch, I thought England looked really confident. As it turns out, that sort of confidence was maybe a little bit of arrogance and a little bit of just thinking that they would just stroll it. And sometimes that happens. Sometimes you can be too confident where you don't focus on what you have to do on the pitch and battle against a really tough side, which Scotland were last night.
Yeah, Jack, let's go on to a few talking points. The first one is the main talking point in your piece, is Harry Kane. What's going on?
Yeah, I don't think Kane has really looked himself at all in the last two games. I thought his performance against Scotland was very similar to his performance against Croatia. I don't think he looks fully fit. He's not really that involved in the game and how England create chances. I'm not sure whether he's trying to play as a 9 or a 10. Like for Tottenham, Kane's got this amazing knack of being effective as both a 9 and a 10, whereas for England at the moment, he seems to be effective as neither. Like, you know, when England tried to get the balls into the box, he was losing out every time to Hanley and McTominay. When he tried to drop deep to get involved in the play, that wasn't really working out for him either. There was one quite good pass out to Reece James sort of early in the second half on the right-hand side, which led to James having a shot. But the fact that Kane got hooked with about 20 minutes left, when he's England captain, he's England's best player, and England needed a goal, and Southgate took him off, I think is damning. And it really shows that Kane is not himself at the moment. Southgate was asked afterwards in the press conference about Harry Kane, and Southgate kind of deflected the question and said, oh, you know, we've all got to look at ourselves. It's a whole team issue. It's not just one player. But it's pretty obvious just from watching the games that Kane is not anywhere near his best at the moment. And given what a big and important player he is for England and how everything goes through him, that really does raise some questions about how England are going to cope, because you can't cope with your best player being this out of nick.
Yeah, David, do you agree with that?
Yeah, I do. And I think going back to the Croatia game, I wasn't too worried because when he's playing in that role, like Jack says, which is a little bit deeper, and you've got other players going beyond him and they're being the danger, then that's fine. You know, it's acceptable that he's a bit quiet in games, but now, especially maybe not this one, because it wasn't really a must-win game. I think the pressure was off England this game because of the first results. And for me, that's what I mean. I wasn't really that excited about the pre-match simply because there were, you know, we could go into it a little bit more relaxed. But I think that, you know, once you start getting to those games when you need somebody like Harry Kane to win you the game, then you want him to be there, you know, and he just isn't at the moment.
Yeah, if you do want to read Jack's piece, by the way, that's just come out this morning, all you got to do is go to theathletic.com/Englandpod and you'll get The Athletic for the best price we've ever had, just £1 a month. So yeah, theathletic.com/Englandpod, and you can go and sign up today. Let's quickly, before we crack on, let's hear from Gareth Southgate.
Yeah, I think it was a frustrating night. I think we know we can play better. We've got to give Scotland huge credit. They defended valiantly. They played well. And in the end, we didn't do enough to win the game. If you're not going to win the game in a tournament, you've got to make sure you don't lose it. So we understand that it's a disappointment for our supporters especially, but we've got to dust ourselves down and move on with the next game. No, I think I know exactly where this team is. It's a very young team that played tonight, and some of them won't have experienced tonight under that sort of intensity and pressure, so that's a huge learning for them. What we've got to do is make sure that we improve for our next game.
Jack, let's go back, all the way back to the start, the team selection. There was a couple of changes at fullback for England. It looked a team that should have been capable of going out and causing Scotland problems, and it didn't really materialise. But do you know the thinking behind the changes?
Yeah, I think Southgate probably just wanted a bit more energy in those fullback positions. You know, obviously he had Trippier and Walker there in the first game. Both of them, I thought, played quite conservatively in that game. Obviously, Trippier playing on his opposite side wasn't really able to get all the way down the line quite as much as an orthodox left back would do. So with Shaw and Reece James in the team, the hope was that maybe the two of them would be able to be a bit more attacking. But they never really got around properly. You know, Scotland obviously had Andy Robertson at left wing back, and then O'Donnell at right wing back, who I thought was fantastic. And the England fullbacks could never really get in. Could never really get through. Like the England's combinations in those positions weren't quite enough to get the fullback into a crossing position. There was one time, I think, early in the second half where Luke Shaw did spring through, and he looked a little bit unsure about what to do and ended up whacking the ball miles out of play. Clearly, England were not good enough in those wide areas to get through, and that's something that Southgate pointed out in his post-match press conference. I did think, going into it, that England would try and be very aggressive from the start and try and win the game early on. And you could see that England probably played their best in the first sort of 10, 15 minutes of both halves. They had a lot of energy and a lot of positivity and did create a few kind of half openings. But what was telling to me was that in both halves, England started really fast. And then the more Scotland settled into it and the more Scotland got control of midfield and settled in their back five, England could not get through, and Scotland grew into the first half and got better and better as that went on, and then they grew into the second half and got better and better as that went on, and England didn't have the intelligence to ask Scotland any different questions, or didn't have the ability to take Scotland anywhere they didn't want to be. And that, I think, is pretty bad. And it does, you know, you can point your finger at Southgate or at the individual players on the pitch, but it was not a good evening at the office.
No, I mean, when I think about it with a more reasonable head on this morning than I had on last night when I was watching a game at a friend's house, you've got to give the Scotland back five credit, because, as you say, they completely snuffed England out. I mean, O'Donnell was awful against Czech Republic, but like you say, absolutely brilliant against England. Tierney being back for Scotland, I think, was a really big thing, and that really added to them, David. But then England should have enough, really, to create more, to make more happen. But we do have to reluctantly give Scotland credit, don't we?
Not even reluctantly. Coming out after the game and sort of looking back at it, my first thought was, you have to give Scotland credit. You have to give Steve Clarke credit for their performance and the way that they'd improved from, even for, I don't think they were that bad against Czech Republic, actually, but they definitely improved from that as well. And they'd learned from that game. I just thought with England, it was going back to a time when we started to try and play passing football, and it's all a bit paint by numbers. It's all a bit, it's turgid, it's slow. You're just going from side to side without a lot of purpose. And that's why I just thought, I mean, even before the game, I thought that it might develop like that. And you need a ball carrier in the team. You need someone like a Grealish, somebody who you could see the, sometimes when we're trying to break through the middle, you know, that's the way the game was going. It was going to become a ball carrier's game. And if it was anybody who was going to do that and everyone was going to create something, it was going to be Jack Grealish for me. And I think that, you know, his introduction, what was it, still were 30 minutes to go, 25 minutes to go, it was still too late.
David, would you have had Grealish on a bit earlier? Because I thought... I agree with what you say, but I don't think Grealish really improved England that much. Maybe he doesn't have enough time. Maybe it's difficult coming into a game like that when you've only got 25 minutes left. But he maybe if he'd come on earlier, it might have made a bigger difference. But I thought when Grealish did come on, it didn't really improve England.
No, and that was the... I mean, you know, by the time you're making the subs in the second half, that's the state of the game. You get to that point where Scotland have... they've got their game plan and they're doing it well. And then so then they're more in the rhythm, and it's probably harder for Jack to come in and break that up as well. But it's I would have liked to see him from the start regardless.
Jack, I thought he came on for the wrong person, Jack Grealish. I think in a game like that when Scotland was sitting so deep, I think Phil Foden was arguably the other player that was most likely to make something happen. You know, Sterling's in the team to get him behind and make things happen, but there was no room to get him behind. I thought it was strange when Rashford came on for Kane, because Scotland are so deep. Surely Calvert-Lewin holding the ball up is going to be of more benefit at that point than Marcus Rashford, because there was just no room in behind anywhere.
Yeah, that's a really good point. I didn't think Rashford for Kane really worked at all. And you're right, it's not... I mean, Rashford doesn't really play as a nine that much for United.
No.
And yesterday, there wasn't really that much room for him to run. Like, he's a running behind guy. He's not a target man. And there wasn't really that much room for Rashford to run into. I think Calvert-Lewin would have been good, because he's, you know, he is a... good old-fashioned number nine. He wins it in the air and he can hold it up. And given that Scotland are getting forced deeper and deeper, and that frankly England can really win anything up against Hanley and McTominay in the middle, maybe if they stuck Calvert-Lewin up, I know it's not really the Southgate way, but maybe if they stuck Calvert-Lewin up there and just got the ball up into him early, then maybe England might have been able to create something a bit better. But I don't think the changes worked at all. And yeah, in terms of taking Foden off, I don't know. Like, I love Foden, and he has some... As ever with Foden, there were two or three moments yesterday where he would produce a bit of skill and everyone would be like, how on earth did he do that? Like, he is a really magical player, Foden, in terms of what he can do on the ball. But I'm not sure it massively works. I'm not sure he's massively working in the system at the moment. I don't really know what he's in the team to do. Because he's obviously coming in from the left, he kind of comes into that sort of mount position and he can get a little bit clogged up in there. And he's not... he kind of worked a few good combinations with Reece James in the first half. But I can kind of just about see why he took Foden off, as unpopular as that was. But... Maybe it should have been Grealish earlier. Maybe Grealish for Sterling. And yeah, I would have put Calvert-Lewin on for Kane. I think, you know, it's not the classic Southgate way of playing, but I think if England needed a winner, I think Calvert-Lewin would have been more likely to help us get it.
Yeah, David, as well, you've got Jadon Sancho sat on the bench. You're allowed to make five subs. England have only made two. We've stayed with the two defensive midfielders for the duration of the game. You know, there's options there on the bench. Arguably, you should be making use of them.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that was said quite early on yesterday about the about two defensive midfielders. And I think Gareth's been quite good in, you know, we're talking about being a tournament manager and, you know, getting used to really coming into his own in these tournament times. And you're talking about Calvert-Lewin coming on. Sometimes you've got to do what the game requires of you. You know, not always go to this plan where, like, this is going to play and then this doesn't work. Do what the game asks of you. And if that required Calvert-Lewin, then, you know, so be it. There's be a little change there, whatever it takes to win the game, because it was clearly wasn't working before that.
Jack, has Southgate got a job on his hands to keep all the players happy? You think Sancho wasn't even involved in the squad in the first game, didn't get on in the second. There's so many options to choose from. And when you're only making two subs in a game that you draw 0-0, you know, players are probably secretly asking a few questions.
Yeah, I'm sure they are. And yeah, it's hard for Southgate because he didn't want a 26-man squad, but he's got one, and that means he has to let down three players every game by not even putting them on the bench. But it's, in the last World Cup, I think he actually managed this pretty well and managed to keep all the players happy. But this time, I mean, I mentioned in my piece that I know that some of the players were asking questions afterwards about why England ended the game with Declan Rice and Calvin Phillips still on the pitch while they were chasing a goal. And I'm sure there's a lot of players who are probably pretty annoyed right now that they didn't get on, they haven't been involved yet. You know, the players who might have expected to be more involved at this Euros and they haven't been. So it's going to be tough. But really, the answer for South, the way you keep players happy is by winning, ultimately. It's not by not by playing all the players. And clearly, Southgate needs to do something a bit different, because if you look at these two games in combination, the Croatia and Scotland games, in which he's played basically the same team except for the fullbacks, how many chances in open play have England actually created? Like, obviously, Sterling, you got Sterling's goal set up by Calvin Phillips in the first game, but it's not like England created a huge amount in open play in that first one. Obviously, Foden hit the post early on. In the second game, they didn't create anything really in open play. And that suggests to me that even though it looks good on paper, that front four combination of Sterling, Mount, Foden and Kane isn't quite working. So the big question really for Southgate is, who do you pick differently in the next time? Whether it's Rashford, Grealish, Sancho, or whether you make a change in midfield with maybe Jordan Henderson coming in or Jude Bellingham. You know, there's lots of different possible answers out there for Southgate, but I think he's basically got until Tuesday evening to find a better combination that can create a few more chances somehow.
Yeah, David, his plans have probably gone out the window a little bit as well, because you imagine he would have wanted to rotate reasonably heavily going into that Czech Republic game, but he needs to find a winning combination now, like Jack says, and he won't be able to rotate and maybe rest some players that he was planning on resting.
No, and I think, you know, it's funny we go back to the last game when we're talking about, oh, well, maybe, they'll rest players for this game and taking things a little bit for granted. And what Jack said the last time we were speaking about, you might put something on Twitter about, you know, how we got a moral duty to try and win every game and not try and take things for granted and pick and choose how we're going to finish in the group. But I just think that it's just another game where they have to just fully focus on winning. You know, there should be no other thought about it. Just focus on winning that game. Do what needs to be done. Don't worry about giving people time or the minutes here, minutes there, and think of the future. Just win the game.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely right. I think we've all been a bit ridiculous ever since the Croatia game about, you know, we're going to make mass changes to Czech Republic and we're going to carefully manage our way through the tournament and we want to play. We're going to choose when we play France and we're going to choose when we avoid this game and all the rest of it. England have not earned the right to do that, clearly. I think England have lost the right to do that by failing to beat Scotland last night. So they have to beat Czech Republic. Czech Republic, we know, are a really good team with some very dangerous players. Remember in 2018 when England played Belgium in that dead rubber game in Kaliningrad and Southgate made 8 changes? England cannot afford to do that on Tuesday night. It has to be a proper team. And they have to play better. You know, England can't... It's not like a situation where England can afford to play a bit worse because they won 2 games. They have to play better than they did in the Croatia and Scotland games against Czech Republic. What exactly that looks like in terms of who plays, I don't know, but that's what Southgate has to figure out. But I hope that we can put to bed all this nonsense about, you know, choosing our perfect way through the tournament or who do we want to play and when. You know, England do not have the right to talk that way.
No, I mean, they don't at all, do they, Jack? Because arguably England's best player was Jordan Pickford, and that in itself is a concern.
Yeah, Scotland's created chances. You know, Dykes and Adams were really, really good. They worked so hard. Like, Dykes is, you know, not the most talented centre-forward I've ever seen. But he's a bit of a handful. Actually, strangely enough, he reminds me of Connor Salmon. He used to play for Wigan Athletic. Adams works really, really hard. And, you know, they had quite a few moments. So Adams in the first half, he had that shot that Stones blocked. Then there was the one where, I forgot who it was, Pickford saved and then it came out to Adams and Adams couldn't quite control the rebound. And then the second half, they went close again. And on another day, Scotland easily could have scored one of those chances. They had about 4 half chances. And Pickford had to do a lot of work. Unfortunately, like, Pickford, as we talked about before, is really reliably good for England. Whatever you say about how he does for Everton, he's never let England down, Pickford. And Pickford had to bail England out quite a few times. And Stones had to throw his way in front of a few things. And there was that moment in the second half, remember, when Mings kind of lost his footing on the wet grass and Stones had to scramble back to cover. And so England did not look very assured. But then, you know, if England had won, then I'm sure they'd think about bringing in Harry Maguire to see how he does. And maybe there's an argument for bringing in Maguire because he's just better than what we've got at centre-back. But given the pressure on that game, would you want to bring in someone who hasn't played since, what, he got injured on the 9th of May, I think it was, so like 6 or 7 weeks ago? It's another huge call for Southgate, whether or not to risk bringing Maguire back in for the Czech Republic game. Because, you know, somebody made the point to me earlier on Twitter, I forgot who the name was, that maybe if Maguire's in the team, England could maybe defend a little bit higher up the pitch than they do under Mings, and that'll help, you know, put a bit more pressure on the opponent, and maybe that'll help them to create some more chances. But, and maybe that would help with the balance of the team, I don't know. But yeah, the defence, even though we haven't conceded yet, we didn't look as solid yesterday as we did against Croatia, I think.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard it right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask me. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/credit card.
This is The England Show from The Athletic. Keep up to date with all of our Euro 2020 podcasts and writing by following us at The Athletic UK.
David, talk us through that big Pickford save, then the one from O'Donnell that went across him. That is an unbelievable save, because I imagine he's seen it quite late as well. It's come through a few bodies. It's in the wet as well. I mean, you're the goalkeeper, so you'll know better than me. How much difference does it make in a game, the grass being wet like that? Because that came at him at some pace as well.
It was a little bit of a concern sort of pre-match. Of course, you're used to playing those conditions, but it doesn't mean that it doesn't make them any less difficult. It was a brilliant save. And especially, you know, from where Jordan's been in the last sort of 12 months, 2 years, in the way that his performances have been, I think for me, it was nice to see him be the mature one last night. Be the one that was telling everyone to calm down. You know, when there was little bits of pressure from Scotland, and they were giving corners away, and he's trying to tell everyone to calm down. I think it's a real sort of progression for him, because it was always a worry, obviously, about his temperament. But it was, yeah, it was just a brilliant save. You know, a big strong hand out his right hand side, getting the ball out of danger. I know that. I mean, somebody commented on Twitter saying that on commentary, I think he was criticised for not putting it far enough out of danger for Lee Dixon's liking. But I think that, yeah. I'm actually going to get a petition together to stop Lee Dixon talking about goalkeeper. See if I can take that to Parliament. It was a really good save, and like I said, it's good to see him being the more mature presence on the pitch. And when things are getting a little bit hairy, you know, the last thing you want is somebody screaming in your ear as a defender, like, you know, and making people panic even more.
Yeah. Jack, I was going to ask, it's probably a silly question, I was going to say, was the weather a bit of a leveller? But then I'm thinking back, and Gilmore was probably the best player on the pitch, so the best user of the ball as well. So trying to blame the weather in my head is a bit stupid, actually.
Yeah, I mean, Gilmore didn't look at all troubled by the conditions. He's an amazing player. Like, he's got this kind of, like, I don't know how best to put it. He's got this kind of like Marco Verratti quality. This sort of wriggliness, yeah. Ability to take the ball under pressure. And there are times when Mount, you know, he's not that old, but obviously a more experienced player ahead of Gilmore in the pecking order at Chelsea, where Mount was kind of chasing after Gilmore, and Gilmore would just spin away from him. I thought it was an incredibly brave and skillful performance from Gilmore. If there was a leveller, I think maybe the leveller was the crowd. You know, this meant to be a home game for England, but I don't think the crowd really worked in England's favour. Obviously, there was a lot of Scotland fans there who were very, very loud and very impressive, but I actually think the crowd seemed to be stressing the England players out a bit in the second half. You know, they booed them off at half-time. In the second half, when you get Mings and Stones passing the ball to each other, the crowd would boo that. as if they wanted the England to hoof the ball forward. And I don't know. I think maybe in a Premier League, sort of Big Six Premier League game, the crowd might be a little bit more patient with the defenders trying to keep the ball to start a move off. And then obviously the fans booting off at the end, which wasn't helpful. And Southgate didn't criticise the fans afterwards, but I didn't. It was hard not to. What it reminded me of was that, I mean, a lot of things about the game reminded me of England 0, Algeria 0 at Cape Town in 2010.
I'm going to say that to you earlier. It's exactly the same.
When Rooney came off and said, oh yeah, nice to hear your own fans booing you. And it did remind me a bit of that, you know. Obviously England were bad, but I don't. Fans pay the money. They have a right to do what they want, but I don't think it was necessarily helpful to boo the England players off. And I don't think that the England fans' attitude when Stones passes the ball to another defender is very helpful either. I think it's just, I feel like it's slightly counterproductive.
Jack, just staying with you because you were obviously at the game. George Colkin's done a piece this morning. I'm just looking through all the different things that have come out on The Athletic this morning, and there is a lot of England content, obviously. George Colkin's done a piece about England lacking leaders on the pitch. Was that something that was visibly a problem for you watching the game?
I'd be lying if I said that stood out to me at the time as an issue. I thought England just lacked a bit of intelligence and skill. I don't know how much it was down to leadership. That said, England obviously, you know, England's most vocal leader on the pitch isn't Kane, it's Henderson, and Henderson isn't playing. And maybe if Henderson had been on the pitch, he would have been able to give them a bit more drive, a bit more decisiveness, which is something Southgate said they'd lacked, maybe a bit more intelligence in how they tried to create chances. Because, you know, the Foden and Mount, who bear a big creative burden in this team, are very young. So maybe having Henderson on the pitch would have helped in that regard. And Kane, for all his strengths, Kane's not a very vocal leader. He's more of a sort of lead by example guy, I've always thought. Maybe that's right. Maybe they did miss the sort of leadership skills of Henderson, although I think a lot of it is just kind of technical. Like, I just think England didn't play well.
Yeah, as I said, there's a lot of England content out this morning. So if you want to read all them, all you got to do is go to theathletic.com/England pod and you'll be able to sign up for our best ever price of just £1 a month. David, I know now that you were watching on ITV. Did you hear Graham Souness after the game? Did you hear his quote of football ain't coming home with that team, I can tell you? Do you agree with that?
Yeah, I can see exactly what he means. I mean, I'm not going to go too overboard about how bad the performance was or how bad a result it could be for England. I think it's, you know, 4 points after two games. You know, if we drew against Croatia and beat Scotland, we'd still be in the same position. We'd probably be happier.
Yeah,
we probably got a little bit too hyped up about after the Croatia game as well. I think I certainly thought it was just a solid performance and that we'd done enough to win the game. But I think that you know, I'm no more hopeful or no less. I'm going to put this.
You're no less hopeful, you're no more pessimistic. Is that right?
Exactly, yeah. This Scotland game hasn't changed anything for me, you know. And I still think as soon as we go to the knockout stages, I think we still think we're in big trouble.
Jack, would you go along with that? England facing anyone good off the back of that performance now, would it worry you?
Yes. Yeah, I don't think England can beat a good team. You know, Croatia were not great in that first game. I thought England played fine against Croatia. But, you know, you're watching so far Belgium, Italy, France are definitely much better than England. Portugal are probably better than England. Germany were okay in that France game, I suppose. I think England will lose to a proper team fairly quickly because England just don't really create enough chances. And I think a good team, you know, a team with an attack like France or Belgium could get at our defence. So, yeah, I've always said sort of last 16 quarterfinals for England at this Euros, and that still feels about right to me.
Oh, it's all gone a bit Graham Souness on this podcast. Football. I certainly don't feel like football's coming home now on this podcast. But Jack, I'll start with you again. Let's say now, I always find these hard to do, picking what team you think England should go with on Tuesday, because I have in my head what I think, and I know it's a million miles away from Gareth Southgate. So what would you do if you're the manager going into Tuesday?
Okay, so having spent the first few podcasts saying he's not going to make a lot of changes, it's not right to make changes, you know, you've got to keep a settled team, I'm going to do a complete 180 and make tons and tons of changes. So I'm going to bring Kyle Walker back in at right back. I'm going to go for Ben Chilwell at left back. I'm going to bring in Harry Maguire for Tyrone Mings at centre back. I'm actually not going to bring in Jordan Henderson. I do think we've got the right balance in midfield, even though it didn't work. And I don't think Henderson can be fully fit, not having played since February. But then I'm going to stick with Harry Kane up front. But I'm not going to bring in Grealish. I'm going to bring in Jadon Sancho for Phil Foden. and I'm going to stick with Raheem Sterling on the left. I'm not going to put in Grealish or Rashford. So yeah, I guess my team is what? Pickford, Walker, Stones, Maguire, Chilwell, Phillips, Rice, Sancho, Mount, Sterling, Kane.
Yeah, it's hard to know, isn't it? Because there is a danger of making too many changes and then making yourself even more disjointed, David. What would you be doing?
Yeah, I mean, I'd stick with the first same first seven players as Jack. You know, I think Maguire comes in, you know, gives you a bit more with the ball at the back than Tyrone Mings does. I really like Chilwell. I thought he should have been start left back anyway. Kyle Walker as well. Two midfielders, same. But I'd keep Foden. I'd just bring in Grealish for Sterling and play both Foden and Grealish together.
Interesting. I think if I was pushed, I think I'd have Trippier at right back because I still think he's just about the best right back that we've got, and I like his dead ball delivery as well. I wouldn't really make any other changes to the back four and the goalkeeper or anything like that because I look at it and I don't think defence has been a problem. So Phillips and Rice probably keep their place as well. I'd bring Grealish in the left and probably shift Sterling to the right, leave Mount behind Kane as well. I just think you need your better players on the park, but I'd definitely be having Jadon Sancho on the pitch at some point. I find it bizarre that he didn't even get on last night. I can't get my head around that at all, and arguably Bellingham could have got on as well, but we've already been through that. All that's left to do is thank you two for coming on this morning and chatting through the game with me. Got to say, I wasn't looking forward to reliving it particularly this morning, but it hasn't been too bad with you two, so thanks very much.
Thanks, mate.
Cheers, mate.
Right then, so that does us. We'll be back on Monday where we'll be bringing you a special mailbag edition of the England show on The Athletic, but it is going to be an exclusive one just to subscribers to The Athletic on UK Audio Plus via Apple Podcasts. You'll be able to hear it as well if you are a subscriber to The Athletic. It'll be ad-free and we'll be answering all your questions, so get them in via The Athletic now if you want to get the guys' opinions on Monday. Thanks ever so much for listening to the England show on The Athletic. Have a great weekend. Cheers.
The Athletic.
Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.